When I entered into that basement, what I realized, what I caught on to was that there was a group of people there, and they were on a journey, as much as I could understand, which I think was about 25% of all that was said and done. But there was a group of people on a journey, and on this journey, they were facing conflict. And there was conflict going on even as I entered the room. And words were used to describe what was going on that I have no idea what it meant. I was even invited to participate, and I politely declined. Also, it was clear that there was great evil involved. But what was curious to me and encouraging, especially as I was thinking about this passage, is that everybody who was participating in this journey had a particular skill or gift or ability to help them navigate through the challenges that they had, many have already gone through and were presently involved with and likely to have more. Everyone had been given something. The question for them was, what were you going to do with what you have? They were playing Dungeons and Dragons. Some of our elders and their wives may or may not have been involved. And the church I grew up in would be astounded to hear me talking about it from the pulpit. But here's the connection. In this story, Jesus is on a journey with his disciples, and they have faced challenge after challenge after challenge. And Jesus is with them, and he has been able to guide and protect and lead them and demonstrate to them his faithfulness, his power for the journey to Jerusalem. And his followers, his fellow journeymen, have this in their minds that when they get to Jerusalem, that is the beginning, not just the beginning, but the beginning and the end of the new kingdom. That the journey will be over. They'll have reached Jerusalem. And at that point, their king, this man who can make the lame walk and the blind see, will establish and demonstrate his power to everyone, to Rome. And they will then reign together. It will all be over. The glory will come, the shining of the new kingdom. But Jesus knows. He knows at Jerusalem, it is just the beginning. And that these followers, these disciples, will become apostles, and they will go out into a world where there is still great darkness, great evil, and they will face challenges that they have never had to endure. And some, most, at the cost of their own lives. And he also knows that here today, Midtown Church, that as we look into his word today, that these same truths are true of us. Until he returns, we will struggle. His kingdom is near. His kingdom is here. It is already, but it is not yet. But he has given us. He has given us from Evie all the way to Al, from Jesse the Fourth, to Rick and Jenny and everybody else in between. He has given us gifts. The question is, what are we doing with what we have been given? Two options that we see here. Two. One, something or nothing. Something or nothing. So let's talk about the something and the nothing of the gifts, the skills, the abilities, the experiences that we have present right here in this room. First, something. In the story, the nobleman, in the parable, there's a nobleman. He has a small town, maybe medium size. It's definitely not a kingdom yet, a village. And he leaves to go receive his declaration of being a king. And this is something that was would be familiar to the listeners because that's how things were done. As a matter of fact, Herod the Great, their king, had gone to Rome and been given the the right of the declaration, the proclamation of kingness by Rome. And his son, who most considered to be an evil man, Archelaus, also went to Rome to receive kingness, to be the title of king, but was refused. He was given a lesser title, ethnarch. And it was politically controversial, but fresh in their minds, so they understand what Jesus is talking about. The nobleman leaves, he goes to receive his kingdom, and while he's away, he wants to make sure that he's going to continue to thrive, to flourish. And so he calls 10 servants to him, and he gives them each a mina. A mina is worth 100 days' wage. So it's no small amount of cash. 100 days' wages to each of them, and he expects them to do business. He wants to see money made while he's away. Passive income, if you will. And then he returns. He's given the title king, and he returns, and he gathers his servants before him to find out what they've made. And the first one comes before him, and he says, "Servant, what have you done? Let me hear about your business." And he's able to tell him with great joy, "I have improved upon your investment 1,000 times. I took my mina, and I made it 10 more minas." "Well done, good and faithful servant. Here's 10 cities. So he did well by the nobleman, the shrewd businessman, and now he receives reward because of that. Second servant comes in, and this servant also says to the nobleman, "I have invested what you gave to me, and I have added to it 5 minas. Well done, and you shall receive 5 cities to rule over in the new kingdom." These faithful servants, they knew the heart of their master. They knew that he was a shrewd man. They knew what to expect. They knew by the word business that they had to get about the business of growing his business. And they knew that while it was risky, that investment was entrusted to them. But they also knew it wasn't theirs. It wasn't their money to begin with. It wasn't theirs, and added more risk to it. Makes me think of when we were given money for our building, when we collected and raised money for our building, there was going to be a gap of time, and we as a session had to decide, what do we do with this money? Do we just hold on to it, or do we invest it? And we knew there was risk involved in investing it while we waited for the building to be built. And we chose to do that. And at first, there was a little bit of a plummet, but then it came back. But we weighed, and I felt the weight of that risk. But God provided. And so here also, and the point I want to make, is that we have been given whatever we have, whatever you consider your own, it is yours because God has given it to you, and really, it is not yours at all. It's his. The question for you is, what are you doing with it? And these men in the story that Jesus tells have done well. They have done wisely. They took a risk, and the risk paid off. I want to tell you about a girl a number of years ago. A girl was born into a wealthy family, and she grew up with lacking nothing. She grew up pretty much with the American dream that many dream of, hope for their children. She, her parents owned a grain business, and they had done very well, and she was reaping the benefits from it, and she grew up and married a good man, had some good children, continued to enjoy the lifestyle that had been handed to her on paper. Every reason to be completely satisfied. But she was not. This girl, this woman now, realized in her heart that something was lacking. All that she had, everything, anything, was not enough to satisfy something in her heart that was missing. And somebody invited her in St. Louis to a Bible study at a church in our denomination. And she went. She went with a neighbor to this Bible study. And in that, God used the words that were taught in that Bible study to bring her to himself, to show her that no matter what she had, no matter the comfortable life that she had, it wasn't good enough. And that she had to give herself as a sinner, as a person born against God, that she had to confess and trust in her King, Jesus Christ. And she did. And her husband, later on, became a believer. But it also changed the way she began to think about her possessions. It radically shifted how she began to think of all that she had been given by her parents. And she began to realize that these were not her things. These were things that had been given to her by her King. And they were his. And that what she did with them mattered to him. They were investments, not for her glory, for her comfort, but for his. And she began to use the resources in her life for those purposes. She invested in a school, small school, that is now Westminster Christian Academy. She gave to a couple churches, New City Fellowship. She gave money at the beginning of a brand new school in the city, South City Community School. She gave to a college, Covenant College. She gave to a seminary, Covenant Seminary. And she gave us money for this very building that we worship in now. God used her. But in order to use her, she had to think, what has she been given and how is she using it? Everything we have, brothers and sisters, everything belongs to God. Psalm 24:1 puts it this way: the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, and all who are in it, every bit of what we see on this planet, all of it is his, and we deserve nothing. And I know there's a lot of debate in political circles about what about our rights. Don't we have rights to certain things? The right to drinkable water, the right to health care, the right to a sustainable job. And yes, on a horizontal level, in comparison to other humans all over the world, we have innate rights because we're created in the image of God. But vertically, in relationship to God, we have no rights. We deserve nothing. Everything that is given to us, the air we breathe, the water we drink, the muscles that we have, the thoughts in our minds, the feelings in our heart, the relationships that we have, all of those things are given to us by grace. It's called common grace. And that extends not just to those who follow Jesus or believe in him, but it extends to every human being. Whatever we have is because of his goodness to us. But here's what we begin to do. We begin to think, well, this is mine. I earned it. I can do what I want with it. For my glory, again, like at the beginning of the service, we're glory thieves. And we begin to think that all these things, yes, given to us by God, are for our joy, our contentment, our comfort, rather than to be used for his kingdom and his glory. The second thing I wanted to point out or expound on by way of application is that we are gifted people. If you're here and you're a follower of Jesus Christ, if you're here, if you're in the boat with Jesus, you have been given gifts. Whether you're one or 91, you have been given gifts to be used for the building up of the body. We did a whole series of sermons on the gifts of the Spirit, and they're for all. It may be teaching. It may be serving. It may be leading. It may be prophecy, tongues, the strange ones. Yes, given to us to be used for his glory and for the benefit of the body of Christ. And so I want to challenge us all, first of all, to think in terms of what is yours and how are you using it for his glory. Second, what is yours? What is your gift? Take time. If you're not sure, come meet with me. One of my passions is that people in our church would know how they are gifted and how they can use those gifts, because we are most satisfied in him when we are being used by him in the way that he's created us. I think I've read and experienced in myself, a lot of spiritual malaise, a lot of spiritual depression when we feel darkened in our relationship with God is because we're not being used, or we're not allowing ourselves to be used in the specific way that he has created us to be used. We're not investing like the good servants. Second, nothing. I'm imagining the conversation with the third servant. Something like this. Bob, Bill and Cindy here, they were wise and shrewd in how they used their minas and added more to our business, my business. How have you used your mina, Bob? Well, for example, nothing. I have done nothing. But you should know that I protected it. I preserved it. It could have been stolen. Thieves abound. Look at our unstable market. Look at the political situation we're in. Look at the crime index in our particular neighborhood. Can't trust anybody today, Master. I wrapped it in a napkin to keep it safe for you. He even did a poor job at that. Most people at that time knew that if you needed to protect a valuable income for another time, you would go to a private location and bury it in the ground. But no, he just wraps it in a napkin. But he gives his excuse. He said, I knew, Master, I know you. And I was afraid. I knew you're a severe man, a shrewd man, and I was afraid to investigate it. It's risky. What if I had invested in an olive, farm and we had a drought? You would have come back angry. I just couldn't handle the look on your face if I failed. Risk is real, and he knew that. And he blames it on fear, but the master calls him out on that. You didn't fear me enough. Your fear was misappropriated. If you knew me, if you trusted your knowledge of me, if you trusted me, you would have known it would have been better to at least put it in a bank where there is some level of increase. See, the problem was that this servant, thinking he knew the master, did not know the master. And he squandered what the master had given to him, blaming fear. Now, let's sympathize with him for a second, okay? Let's sympathize with this third servant, because risk is real. It is. It is hard to invest in the lives of others. It is hard to invest what we have been given, especially if we have been comfortable with what we have been given. It's hard to take a portion of it or any of it or all of it. It's hard to take it and put it out on a limb, because we know that limb may get chopped off. And if it does, then we have to suffer and we might have to let other people down. Risk is real. And in today's culture, what when I was growing up was the saying, no pain, no, has now become, if pain, refrain. Risk isn't worth it, because we may lose, we may suffer. If I give, it might not come back to me. If I spend time with this person, may not like me. If I try to serve in the children's ministry, they might not like what I have to say. Or it may be chaos. Probably will be. And I understand that. And so it's important for us to ask the question, what is the fear that is guiding our refusal to invest? What are we protecting? Our comfort zone, our reputation, our money, our friendships. The fear of talking to our coworkers about Jesus. The fear of giving generously. 10% is a insignificant amount, especially if we're living month to month. But we misunderstand our Master, who tells us when we give, it's already His. Right? If God wanted, He could snap His finger and take it all away from you. But He could also snap His finger and give you in great abundance. And what Scripture says is if you give, He returns overflowing, billowing. He gives. He provides. But it's hard for us to trust that. I would suggest to you that one group of people who know particularly the fear of giving an investment with no return are moms. Amen, moms? My mom's right over here. And that's because moms give, and they give, and they give, and they give, and they wonder, is it ever going to make a difference? I told you a couple weeks ago about some friends of ours. Alice and I have friends that are a little bit older than us. Their kids are a little older than ours. And their first son, their oldest son, took his own life. And we were at his funeral on Friday, this past Friday. And it was full Twin Oaks Church, full of people that love this family. And the mother and father got up, Brad and Patty. And Patty wrote a letter to her son after he had passed, and she read it in front of everybody. It was very powerful. But in the letter, she talked about her investment into her son's life. She talked about memories of discovering that for the first time that she was pregnant, and the joy, and then the feeling of carrying this child, this boy, around in her womb, and the day of giving birth. And she talked about the joy of seeing him grow and use and discover his own personality and gifts and personal struggles, and walking with him and trying to figure out what does it mean to be a mom with a son who's really struggling. And at what point do you dive in to save? And then at what point do you step back and let God be in control, and having to figure all that out? And she talked about just the days and hours that she spent praying with and for her son. And I was thinking about that. And I wondered, you know, if at any point while she was crafting this beautiful letter, did she think, what a waste. What a waste of investing in my first child for him to go in this way. But I can tell you that is not at all what was on her heart. In the tone of the letter, it was an expression of sorrow, but also great joy and honor in the time that she had with her son and the way that she invested in her life. Why? And that's because she had a different perspective of how and why and what our investments and how our investments bear fruit. See, as a follower of Jesus, the ones that He is speaking to here and to us now, we have been given a different calculator, a different app as we assess our investments. When you meet with your investor, and Alice and I are doing this tomorrow, meeting with our financial advisor to talk about how much gain we've got in preparation for our retirement. But when we assess our investments as followers of Jesus, it's a whole different way of thinking. Because the world could look and see, oh, you spent so much time on what? You gave your money to who? You could be making money out there, but you're working for free, volunteering at this church or this shelter or this community. And it could be tempting for us to say, man, maybe it was a waste. No, it's not. Because faith in our King teaches us that God never wastes what is invested in his kingdom. His word does not return what? Void. It does not return empty. It does not return nothing. It returns something. And so even for this mother and for us, in ways that we invest in things around us and it looks on the outside like it didn't work or it failed or it's not happening or it ends before we expected it to end or it's taking away from our own stuff, our own comfort, what God is doing is he is growing fruit not only in the world but fruit in our own lives. He's bearing fruit because of our investment. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Those are the fruit that are lasting, not temporal, but lasting. Fruit that we take with us into the next kingdom. Fruit that bears in the lives of those around us. When you give, Midtown Church, when you give, and whether that's financial or give time or give prayer, there is fruit born in this congregation, in my life, that you may never see. But there is also fruit born in your life, fruit of his Spirit. Alice and I love watching British crime shows. And like, they're very different than American shows in certain ways, which I'll spare you the details. But one similarity is there's always a stupid side plot. Every show. There's always something going on that seems to be completely unrelated to the main plot. And we even call it the stupid side plot. Someone has an affair with a secretary, or someone's, you know, not getting along with their parents. And in this one, there is a side plot. And it has to do with the citizens in the nobleman's town. If you remember at the beginning, it tells us, and it just oddly kind of sticks it in there, that while he goes off to receive his kingdom, and he gives money to his servants, it says, but his citizens, verse 14, hated him and sent a delegation after him saying, we do not want this man to reign over us. And again, this would have sounded familiar because that's exactly what happened with Archelaus. In their area, he would have been their king and he went to Rome and they didn't like Archelaus. He was an evil man and they sent a delegation to Rome to say, no, we don't want him as our king. And Rome listened. And he was not given the title king. But see, that's different here. That's distinct here than what we see in this nobleman who is representative in the story, the parable. He is Jesus. And Jesus is going to go away and he is going to be given title king because he's good, he's faithful, he's merciful, he's powerful, he's a good king. But they're rallying up against him. And at the end of the story, it says, but as for these enemies of mine who did not want me to reign over them, bring them here and slaughter them before me. They were destroyed. And all of a sudden, to the listeners, if they're paying attention, the side plot becomes the main plot. The listeners who are there, there's the followers, and they're the ones given the challenge, the followers, and that's for us. You have been given much. Midtown Church, you have been given much. How are you using it? Are you doing something? Are you doing nothing? And squandering it for yourself is the same thing. What are you doing? But for the other listeners, for those surrounding, the Pharisees, the tax, or the Sadducees, and the teachers of the law, the tax collectors, for those on the outside, he's asking a bigger question, and that is, are you for me or are you against me? Will you receive your king or reject him? If you reject him, you will be destroyed. And I want to make sure that's clear for everyone here. If you're in the boat, if you're in the boat with Jesus, if you have bowed a knee to him, for you the question is, are you going to fish or are you going to cut bait? But for those who are not in the boat, those who haven't given themselves to Jesus, let me encourage you in this. You have, and we have, a good king. He loves you. He knows you. You are created in his image, but you are, like the rest of us, flawed, broken, and willful. But the good news, you don't need to live with guilt. You don't need to live with shame. You don't need to live with regret, because he offers freedom. That's why he was going to Jerusalem, to die, in order that you wouldn't have to. So join us. There's a journey, and it's going to be hard. There are going to be challenges. Already have been. But you are welcome to join in with a group of people equally flawed, but who have been gifted, and you are gifted too. Trust Jesus. Trust the King. He loves you. He forgives. Join in the journey. I want to end by reading from Hebrews chapter 12, because whatever we've been given, for those of us who are risk averse, or for those of who are glory thieves, let me give you this encouragement when it comes to the kingdom of God from the book of Hebrews chapter 12, verses 28 and 29. Therefore, let us be grateful for receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken. And thus, let us offer to God acceptable worship with reverence and awe, for our God is a consuming fire. Let me pray.